This is a rather back to basics talk, I must say, considering some of the more advanced and application oriented talks we've had earlier. This is more or less facet analysis 101. I've been involved with thesaurus construction and facet analysis for quite some time. I was attended some of the latter meetings of the classification research group, and I'm still involved with the Bliss Classification Association. And I've been involved also recently with the development of the standards for thesaurus construction or controlled vocabularies for indexing under the chairmanship of Stella Dexter Clark, the ISO 25964 international standard in particular. I was asked to give this paper perhaps in order to air some of the issues which I raised in those discussions, and some of which were not accepted and some of which were accepted, but there's a few bees in my bonnet that I'd like to bring up just now, just to try to see whether other people have the same views. One thing that occurred to me when we've been talking with the Bliss Classification Association was the idea that you should build a thesaurus on the basis of a classification. This is often said, and I'm not convinced that that's the right way around. It seems to me a bit of cart before the horse, that you can't have a classification unless you start off with the concepts that are the building blocks, which is why I've put a bundle of bricks in the bottom corner there. And I think that the order of development should be, first of all, starting with concepts, the individual blocks that you're building from. Then you group them into facets. Once you've done that, you can add a few more links and things, and you become a thesaurus. And then you provide ways of combining concepts from each of those facets to make a classification scheme. So I'd like to go through a few of the steps, I think, that are involved in doing this. First of all, think what concepts are. And I think it's more or less accepted now that in doing any knowledge organisation scheme, we talk in terms of concepts rather than in terms of terms. And what a concept is not dependent on the label which we give it. We've had illustrations this morning about not knowing what some words were. The words that were mentioned were things like cold fusion or knowledge organization. What does that mean? What is meant by taxonomy even? I strongly dislike the word taxonomy because nobody will actually define what it means. And even the standard says it is some kind of structure with elements, with some classificatory elements, which is not, to my mind, an adequate definition. As far as I'm concerned, there are two kinds of knowledge organization scheme. There are thesauri and there are classifications. And I've called this talk Rigorous Facet Analysis, the basis of constructing all types of knowledge organisation scheme, because I don't think that there are a lot many types. I think there are pre-coordinate and post-coordinate schemes. And apart from that, there are variations within those, but I don't think these variations are all that substantial. Talking about concepts then, we don't define a concept by the label we give it. We define it partly by the label, what the common assumption is, what it means, what is cold fusion, but also by a scope note, which can be as extensive as you like and have includes, excludes, and so on. You can have relationships, which says what its parent concept is. This is the Aristotelian idea of defining a concept in terms of a genus and the elements which differentiate it from its parent. There are difficulties, certainly, with things like compound concepts. When you divide concepts up, what is an elementary concept and what is a compound? And there is judgment there. These are not absolute or mechanical. You can't give a prescriptive rule. There are guidelines as to when you treat something as a concept and when you treat it as a compound of more than one concept, like coal and mining, for example. But once you've defined the concept, then you can think of a term to label it. And this term may be, and is most usefully, the most commonly accepted label. But that label may, in general terms, have broader meaning. Within the controlled vocabulary, you restrict its meaning to the definition that you have specified. This is the kind of definition of saying that a word means what I mean it to mean. There's no point in having an argument about what it means with different people. The whole business of what is truth, or the whole philosophy to me, seems to be an argument about definitions. And I think you write down the definition, then the consequences of that will automatically follow. It depends what you mean by, as the Brains Trust used to say. When you've got concepts clearly defined, you then sort them, and I've sorted them into facets based on fundamental categories, where the relationships between them are generic specific. There is a relationships, and I'll talk about other kinds of relationships later on, but I think they're more difficult. This, though, is not straightforward top to bottom. It's not necessarily top down or bottom up. It's iterative. You start grouping concepts into hierarchies, and then you decide whether or not you've got a sensible hierarchy. Because you're having difficulty in fitting things in, you define the grouping differently. So that there's an iterative process. You both go top down and bottom up. But basically, it's based on the hierarchical relationship. And the kind of fundamental categories that often arise from that are distinct and mutually exclusive groups. I put in here things like things, activities, materials, properties, so that things like metal products, which was referred to in a talk in another place, as they say in the Parliament, metal products are not materials, so that they can't have a hierarchical relationship between metal products and metals. It's an associative relationship, if anything. Abstract concepts like love, war, costs, benefits, taxes, access and rights, and so on, they art and architecture, Thesaurus calls these associated concepts, which always seems a slightly odd term to me because it depends what they're associated with. But they're things that are not physical and they don't fit into any of the other categories. And certainly the choice of fundamental categories, again, is not absolutely objective, but you have to use it consistently within any particular knowledge organisation scheme. I've said we talk about relationships being genus and species, and that if you have a property which applies to one class, this is like the ontology definition of classes, I think it's probably best to stick to that kind of relationship so that our thesauri are at least compatible with the ontologies that are being developed from there, that any property of a parent class, such as a bird laying eggs, must be inherited by all of the child classes from that, so cuckoos are birds. Facets is, I'm afraid, one of those terms which also is ill-defined, or at least it's different things to different people. And again, there is not an absolute truth as to what a facet is, but different people have used it to mean different things. I've suggested that facets should be based on fundamental categories, and this is the definition used in ISO 25964 and in the Art and Architecture Thesaurus. Some people tend to use the word facets just to mean bits of catalogue information, like the author facet or the publisher facet or the size facet, which are really elements of fields of the catalogue record, as far as I would be concerned, as a traditional librarian, or metadata elements, if you want to be a bit more whizzy. But I think that for my purposes, I think that's not a helpful definition of a facet. Another way it's often thought of and often defined is facets of a subject. And this comes from Ranganathan's idea that you start off with something called personality, which is the core of what is the element of a subject. And he often starts with discipline, so that if you talk about education, then the personality of that is the people being educated. And then you go on facets or relationships of other subjects to that. But that gives some difficulty, and it depends. It's going to be the facets are then discipline-specific. And I think that there are arguments for saying that facets should not necessarily be restricted to a discipline, that you can have general facets which span across all disciplines. These non-disciplinary facets are being revived in some ways. Claudio Noli in Italy has been developing, he and his colleagues have been developing something called integrative levels classification, which is a single list of concepts without grouping them under discipline. You start with integrative levels, as you're probably familiar with, is they start off with the most fundamental things like atoms and elementary particles and build them up and through physics into chemistry and then into life and then into social interactions and then into thought and so on. So you get different levels of concept, but they're not grouped necessarily by disciplines. The horses that we were talking about earlier are not necessarily categorized in one discipline or another. I just quote a couple of paragraphs from the introduction to the Bliss classification from 1977, which says that these phenomena classes are designed to take that literature on a given concept, the entity, attribute, or process, which treats it from the viewpoint of several or all disciplines. An example would be a work on the horse, treating it from the zoological, equestrian, agricultural, military, artistic, etc. viewpoint, or a work on colour, treating it from the viewpoints of optics, biology, photography, painting, decoration, etc. The BC takes the view that provision should be made now for the classification of such material from the phenomenon rather than the discipline view. Since the growth of such literature is not to be disputed, the sensible theory appears to be to make comprehensive provision for all the forms it might take, i.e. for all phenomena, not just a rather arbitrary selection based on the current situation. And indeed, as I've said, the UDC has now got common tables for some of those general categories or facets. We've got properties, materials, relations, process, activities, and persons, although at the moment it says that these should be used only as secondary to the disciplinary-based classes. I don't see a reason why we can't develop this further so that they can be used as the primary locations, perhaps not within UDC because it would be upsetting its whole structure too much, but in a newly developed classification, then these may well be independent facets which are not disciplinary based. And Vickery indeed suggested in discussing this with Claudio Noli just before our last conference, he suggested there be at least two sequences. One is phenomena, which is things, and activities, which more or less corresponds to the matter and energy elements of Ranganathan's facet formula. So just as a little example, I've put up three of these possible independent facets. I've got people on the left, activities in the middle, and materials on the right. And as usual, we have node labels which group these facets into arrays according to specified characteristics of division. People by occupation, people by age, cooking by process, foods by origin, vegetable foods by part of plant, and so on, so that you can group these things. And we use these node labels to identify the characteristics by which the arrays have been selected or sorted. And these are independent. This is the basis of a thesaurus, where we have relationships like this, which are purely hierarchical, and things fall into independent facets. You can't have a hierarchical relationship between carrots and cataloguing, for example, or between farmers and painting. One is an activity, the other is a person or a material. Having got that kind of structure, sorted out your concepts, you can then make it into a thesaurus by doing a bit of interior decoration and adding in things like synonyms, other alternative names for things, looking at compound terms and giving entry points so people will find how they've been dealt with, recording associative relationships, grouping some concept groups. Many thesauri pull groups out as microthesauri, themes or domains, as they call them, so that you've got a little subset of a thesaurus which may be useful for people who don't need the whole thing. And there are presentation and management issues of a thesaurus that needed to complete it, such as looking at how it's going to be displayed and what metadata is associated with it. This is not trivial because metadata is important in the whole management of a knowledge organisation scheme, the whole question of when it's revised and how it's revised and how you deal with changes. But these are not fundamental. They are necessary to add on to make it practically useful. With a scheme like that of 3 or 6 or 10 independent fundamental facets grouping your concepts together, you then have to combine these at the time of searching by creating Boolean statements, combining them together. And although in the list that I had there, in a web environment, it's sometimes easy just to have tick boxes beside each of these so that you can tick and choose rather than having to write a Boolean statement, although I don't personally think that Boolean algebra is as difficult as people seem to think. Just you can have children or adults and building or swimming and cabbages or lettuces, if you like. You can combine things in that way by ticking, and it automatically gives you a combination of several, an or from each between the terms in a single facet, and an and between the terms of different facets. Once we've got that, that's a thesaurus, as far as I'm concerned, and you don't need to go much further. If you want a classification scheme, then you build that up from your concepts by adding a mechanism for combining concepts so that you're not reliant on combining at the time of searching, but you can do pre-coordination. You can create compounds before, at the time of indexing. And in order to do that, you have to decide in what sequence you're going to combine things. Ranganathan had personality, matter, energy, space, and time. The classification research group came up with this longer string of citation order, of thing, kind, part, property, etc. But these are often said to be a citation order of facets. And the difficulty is that they're not facets in the way in which I have defined them. They're dependent on roles rather than anything else. Patient, for example, or an agent can both be people. A patient can be an object which is operated on. An agent can be an object which is operating. So that these are not independent facets. They are expressing the role that each entry has in relation to the preceding entries in that sequence. So when we combine things, we have to introduce labels, which I've called facet labels, and this is one of the points where I had some discussion, shall we say, with the people on the standard, because I think that these are quite distinct. The ones I put in round brackets there are quite distinct from the node labels, which I've referred to earlier, which are in angle brackets. These facet labels show when a new facet is being introduced into a sequence. In the first, in the green one there, I brought in, I've got as far as cataloguing, and then we've agents, people, librarians. So this is librarians who are the agents in a cataloguing process. And I've introduced a label there which has both got a role as agent and a facet name as people, so that we're combining the two. In this case, cabbages, we've got activity, cooking, and we can have a node label showing cooking by process. Obviously, this is just an extract from the previous facet. And then again, an agent label here, a facet label showing that. And the whole idea is that any of these terms which have been put in colour have been brought down from the facet in which they originate. And the main point is that a node label, which introduces the arrays, shows a hierarchical relationship between the terms preceding it and the terms following it, whereas facet labels are not showing a relationship of that kind at all. They are showing a combination. This is a combination of a person and a process, or between an object and a process, an activity. These are combinations rather than subordination. They're not hierarchically related. I've shown these examples up till now without any notation. And a notation is something which is used in many classification schemes, but is not necessary, is not an inherent element of a classification. Various schemes have been used to create strings of this kind, like PRECY and the British Technology Index, which have used punctuation between words rather than using symbols. PRECY use quite complicated symbols, and when you do have a notation, you can bring in certain symbols, like the punctuation symbols in UDC or the zero in Dewey. I'll just go on to hierarchies. Just another element I wanted to talk about is that in a hierarchy, I've said that these facets are constructed on the basis of a relationship between classes. At the bottom end, bottom of the tree, the leaf nodes of a scheme of that kind, we may have classes of one, which are proper names. And these are fair enough at the bottom end, but once you get that far, you get stuck. You can't have other types of London or types of Titanic. They can have broader concepts, but they cannot have lower level species. They're classes of one. That's something which it's often said that there are problems that if you have a compound, that then you may have difficulty in enumerating specific concepts which are specific to that compound, where we've got joint diseases and arthritis is a subdivision of the combination of joints and inflammation. We've got a combination there across that facet label. But I don't think that this is a major problem. I think you can decide which of the elements of the compound these specific terms fall under and put them under there. The whole part relationship is a difficult one, which I'll not discuss fully here, but I've said to avoid, mainly because it can lead to misleading relationships and you can't really get inheritance of characteristics. Wheels are not necessarily parts of bicycles, and therefore they don't inherit the properties of bicycles. In the standard, it lists four different categories of concept where whole part relationship should be accepted as hierarchical. It says body parts for one thing. I don't see what the difference is between body parts and bicycle parts. I think we can say that you don't necessarily need to say a skull. It's a part of a skeleton, but that's not a hierarchical relationship. In fact, again, to quote from the Bliss introduction, it says there that related terms, these are terms in a relationship other than the generic relationship of that of Jesus' species. Only one such relation is widely recognised, and this is whole part. So I think quite often we should think of whole part relationships as associative rather than as hierarchical. Geographical locations and hierarchical social structures are, to me, different in nature from the class relationships in a thesaurus. Most of these are proper names, most of them are classes of one, and they don't inherit attributes. So you can certainly say that Paris is part of France. France is a country, but you can't say that Paris is therefore a country. It's best to keep these classes of one separate, which is why we've got the AAT use the separate thesaurus of geographical names, use a separate thesaurus of names of artists. And I think it's best to avoid mixing the two. Name authority files are common in libraries as separate from the subject thesauri. And as I said, disciplines and fields of discourse could be seen as being generic rather than partitive. So I've just reiterated again the idea that build organisation schemes step by step, start with concepts, group them into facets, add a few more relationships to make a thesaurus, then provide for combining terms from facets, make classification. You may need several iterations, and it's not a mechanical process. You still need skill and judgment, but that's why we've got jobs as information professionals.
Back to your instance, and it occurred to me one of your instances was Microsoft Windows.
Yes.
And I thought immediately, well, there's Microsoft, there's Windows 98, Windows XP, blah, blah,
right.
And so it seems to me that I'll let you comment on it, but it seems to me that something like Microsoft Windows can be seen sometimes as an instance and sometimes as a class. How do you deal with that?
Yes, I suppose it could be. It depends whether you think of it as a class of operating systems, in which case, if you call it a class, then you can treat it as a class. There's not a firm rule, I don't think, about any of these things. The main thing is whether it has got subtypes, and each of them inherits the characteristics of it. If you say Microsoft Windows as a concept has got subtypes, then you can do that. Yeah.
And I guess one of the things about this particular case is that Microsoft Windows is a proper name, and we don't normally think of proper names of the class.
Yeah, right.
Any other questions?
I'm Laura Balkin from the University of Essex. I'm interested in what you think about poly hierarchies, because I think you skipped over the slide on it.
Yes, I did, rather, yes. Two things can be said about that. Basically, I think polyhierarchies are fine. You can have a concept which occurs in more than one place. The usual examples for things like pianos are both stringed instruments and keyboard instruments, for example. But if you're going to have a classification scheme in which you want to be able to get a determined sequence of items and you're going to combine things, then you can't create combinations for every place where that term might occur. The concept of horses occurring in art, for example, then the concept of horses occurring in sport. If you're going to have a compound which involves horses and training or colouring or something, then you've got to choose one of those places as being the primary one for the purposes of creating compounds. Otherwise, you're going to scatter them everywhere. But in general, if more than one hierarchical relationship is valid, which it commonly is, then you should allow polyhierarchies. You should allow a concept to occur in more than one array within a facet. If you're creating compounds in a classification scheme, then there may be problems because you've got to decide which one you're using to create the compound. And you may want to use it in more than one place if you're restricting it to that interpretation. But if you're using the term in general, then you have to have one preferred place which you would use in order to build compounds, I would think.
Thank you. I'd like to ask John to thank you for his presentation.
Thanks.